introduce a soft reboot.
This is KPOO San Francisco 89.5. You've reached Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and you're listening to our radio show, Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. And today we have our co-host Jason McClain on, who is a master NLP practitioner and what he calls an evolutionary guide with us today, and he has brought a guest with us. So firstly, hello, Jason.
Hi, Julie. It's always good to be here.
It's great to have you, and I'm excited about the guests that you brought today.
Yeah, we actually have two wonderful guests.
Yes.
Just so much richness today.
Absolutely. So do you want to start by introducing Guy, and I suppose I can introduce Jerry?
Yeah, sounds good. So Guy Sengstock, thanks for being here, Guy.
Thank you.
Co-founder and president of the Arete Center for Excellence, Guy is recognized as a powerful, effective course leader, personal coach and trainer, artist, author, and philosopher. He has over 15 years' experience providing perspectives and insights that lead people in having healthier, richer, and more fulfilling lives. The cornerstone of his work is a deep commitment to openness, truth, and beauty. Guy is committed to serving individuals and communities and living the fullest expressions of the deep mysteries of life that connect all of us. Guy holds a BA of Art from the San Francisco Art Institute and is currently living in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife and three children. Thanks again for being here, Guy.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And we have Jerry. Hello, Jerry.
Hello.
And tell me how I pronounce your last name.
Candelaria.
Okay. You are the co-founder of Arete Center for Excellence and a co-founder of the community. He has 20 years of experience in personal growth and development trainings through several of the world's leading-edge transformational leadership, sexuality, and sensuality-based organizations. Jerry is recognized as an effective, dynamic course leader, community leader, and personal coach and consultant. For over the last 10 years, Jerry has brought his experience in leadership and community development forward in creating and supporting several intentional communities. His commitment to the individual, community, and the world has contributed to the lives of thousands of people. Jerry has an extensive background in leading courses and coaching people for over a decade in the areas of relationships, communication, purpose, results, masculine and feminine dynamics, sensuality, sexuality, and spirituality. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area as well with his wife and two children. Good to have you as well, Jerry.
Thank you.
Wow. Thanks for honoring us with your presence. Jesus, bios.
Yes, great. So obviously you're both with the Arete Center and you both have kids. That's great. Someday we'll have to have a totally separate conversation about raising healthy kids, but that's not today.
Talk about relationships. So, I'm curious, what does Arete mean? Because my only connection to that term is it's an Aristotelian concept, isn't it?
Yes, it's an ancient Greek term. And there's actually no real agreed-upon translation or direct translation into English. It's often translated into virtue or excellence or essence. I've also heard it translated. But there is a specific way that the Greeks used that term. And the way that they saw it was your arete was, in a sense, your deepest self or your deepest potential. And there were two schools of thought at that time, which were the Platonists, or the ones who followed Plato, and the Sophists. The Platonists said that your arete was something that it could never be taught. It was like a gift from the gods.
Wow.
The Sophists, however, thought that it actually could be taught, that through language and rhetoric and all that kind of thing, it could be taught. And the way that, however, we mean it is we really see it as both, that who you most are, your deepest self, is intrinsic. It's there whether you want it there or not. However, it does take community and relationship for that to be unconcealed. It's through relationship that it's unconcealed.
Hmm. Gotcha. So it is a gift and the deepest. Would it also be truest self? Is that also accurate? Or?
Sure, you can say truest self as well.
Great. So you guys have some experience you take people. You call it the Arete experience. What's the purpose of the Arete experience?
The purpose of the Arete experience essentially is to unconceal who you truly are in such a way that you experience it as a gift. And that, so you can then have choice to give that gift wherever you want, in your personal relationships, in your career, in your finances, wherever you wish. So the, really the purpose of the Arte experience is to create an experience in which you see for yourself who you most are.
Hmm. Now, you know, I've talked to some people and they're like, you know, they go, well, how can I be other, you know, anything other than what I'm presenting? Like this whole idea of, you know, authentic self or is kind of, so, you know, that's one question. Like, how do you uncover that? What is that about? Or what does the process, what would the process look like?
It sounds like a couple questions there.
Yeah.
So let's just go with the first question.
Sure.
Which is, someone says that, what's the difference? It's just whatever I present, this is me.
Yeah.
Right? Well, there is what you present, and that is you.
Yeah.
And it's the you that you're presenting.
Okay.
And it's a very common term we all hear about is the term masks. You know, we talk about what's the, you know, people talk about sometimes they go into a social situation and they're wearing their social mask. They're wearing their out with their friends mask. They're wearing their work mask. You know, because if you think about it, when you present yourself at work, it's a little bit different sometimes than how you present yourself at home or out with friends. Or
it's kind of like a role you take on.
Kind of like a role you take on. Exactly. And oftentimes we mistake ourselves for the role that we're wearing. Mm-hmm. And what?
Sorry, are you saying we actually get confused about who we are, or get confused about?
We forget.
We forget.
We identify with the role that we're wearing. Mm-hmm. So if we're wearing a role of the successful businessman, it's a great role to wear, and it can make a lot of money and can create a lot of great things in the world. And then when we come home and we're still wearing that role, and our spouse or partner wants to relate with us, but we're relating to them in a business mode, that can cause a few problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you want to sign a contract about dinner.
Exactly.
I've tried it, you know, it just isn't very effective.
Or if you want to sign a contract about a relationship, it's a really difficult thing to do because a relationship is very dynamic. Mm. It's a living thing. It's not a contractual thing, so to say.
Mm-hmm. It seems that most of us, well, I suppose there are a lot of people that don't realize that the mask is a mask. They think that is the person, like you said, they identify with that. And I think part of that's because we've gotten so much positive feedback of what our society thinks we should be and what is acceptable that we start to take on that. And tell me if I'm incorrect, but I think a lot of disease or anxiety, depression, whatever it might be, is not really realizing that we are identifying as that person that's playing that role, and it's not fulfilling to us, but we don't really realize that we think we are that person.
Mm-hmm. You can think of your mask, liken it to wearing sunglasses. So say you put on a blue pair of sunglasses, and at first when you put it on, you're like, wow, everything's blue. But after about 10-15 minutes, you kind of forget that you're wearing glasses. And you no longer have a relationship that it's blue. You're just assuming, and it's been concealed from your view. Very much our roles and our social roles and our masks are like those, is that way of we put them on and then we forget that they're on and we just think it's like that.
You know, when I've heard this term mask being used in conversation before, it seems like there's always a valence, like a pejorative valence, like it's a bad thing, you know. You've got a mask on, and it's judged as bad. It sounds like what you're saying is it's just what we do, and it's just about being aware of it and having choice around it. Could you say something about that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, because when you're aware of the mask that you have on, you can choose it and choose it powerfully. And mm-hmm. I think that it's like if we know that we're wearing our masks, we can really wear them, and we can do a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine where it's absolutely not appropriate to take the mask down in certain contexts, right? Or to, yeah.
Yeah, for instance, you know, for Bill Gates, for instance, to take his business mask off in front of a group of business people and show himself as the family man and even show his vulnerabilities and his emotions could be quite detrimental to the business world.
The stock could go down immediately.
Exactly.
Well, I definitely agree with what you're saying, and there's an appropriate way to show different sides of you depending on who you're with. Isn't there a little piece of everybody that just loves to see that authentic person come through? And so what I guess I'm saying is that the mask isn't necessarily sort of shielding the real you, but just maybe filtering different pieces of the real you through. So, you know, for example, if maybe I am in a business meeting and somebody, but maybe I know them a little more personally where it doesn't have to be 100%, you know, all business, and they're really goofy with me, or they share something really personal. Well, that might not be appropriate business, you know, rules. That really connects me with that person so much more than anything they could show me about how knowledgeable they are in their field. So I guess my am I accurate in that humans can really resonate when there is a piece of that true person coming through the other side? Is that kind of what juices people?
It's something perceived as, you know, deeper.
Absolutely. And if you're wearing a mask and you're unconsciously wearing it and it's sort of stuck to your face, it will inhibit that true self, or that, as you use the term, authentic self, from coming through. Mm. So you might even have a harder time making the connection. Whereas if the mask is on by choice and there's that connection, you can really let that connection happen because you recognize that you're not the mask you're wearing and that they're not the mask that they're wearing.
Ah, yes.
Then it actually becomes fun, because just like you were talking about, what I heard is you can play with it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a lot of fun because you could either have it on or not, or expose a little bit of yourself or not.
Right. One of my favorite things to do is I have very... I don't want to say opposing, but very opposite ends of the spectrum masks that I wear. You know, one of them is very cerebral and professional, and then the other one is, you know, dyeing my hair red and fire dancing or whatever it is. And actually, that really provides me so much depth, to so much fulfillment for me, because I can have fun playing with all of these different modalities or personalities, or but I'm still being my authentic self, because I feel that that's really important. But, you know, for a long time when I was in the business world, you know, I was, you know, you didn't want to let them know certain things about you, and I sort of had a little bit of shame about that sort of wilder side if people really knew about it. But now it's, you know, I'm still my authentic self in both situations, but I just have more richness to what I can express in a variety of situations.
I think it's also worth testing and gathering feedback, like, gee, how much truth, you know, can people handle?
Sure.
To notice that, take feedback from it. Well what I'm, and, you know, again, so what do people get out of the course, and how do you guys do that?
Well, people get a variety of things out of the course. The one thing that they do commonly get that you could sort of say is across the board is people do get an experience of themselves that they've never had before. And the experience of themselves that they get is that experience of, again, using that term that you used, which was authentic self. They get to experience themselves, who they really are, their true nature, in such a way that has a profound impact on them, a mark, sort of a turning point in people's lives that makes it kind of hard to go back to the way it was, because once your eye opens, you kind of have to consciously shut your eye.
Yeah, there's once you go conscious, there's no going back.
Well, that's perfect. That's the Matrix, right? The red pill. Once you take the red pill, you can't ever go back.
No going back.
Well, you can. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of sort of
shutting yourself down
and kind of dimming the lights in your mind and going back unconscious. People get the experience, also get the experience of being in a very close proximity with other people and relating deeply and intimately in such a profound way that they that they oftentimes want to go back into their lives and bridge the gap in relationships and create and foster that the type of intimate connections that they have at the course.
So again, how do you do that? Or Guy, did you want to?
Yeah, well, I just add to it is that when we're really being ourselves, and when we, in an appropriate way, take off our masks, and we're being really authentic and honest and exposing ourselves and revealing our deepest hearts, what the Arte experience provides is an experience where you get to do that in a way that's really safe and appropriate for you. And in doing that, what you get, inevitably, is you get yourself as a gift. Because when you're being yourself fully, what happens is the people around you start to open up. And they become more themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, when we unconsciously close our hearts and automatically put on masks when we're unaware of it, conversely, we can get the feedback in a way that's really appropriate for us in the course that actually that creates suffering in people around us.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start to see that how you're closing down is creating suffering for yourself and others, it makes it kind of hard to keep doing that.
Right, right. It's one thing to cause ourselves suffering, but when we start to cause other people suffering, we tend to wake up a little bit more, because that's not our intention.
Right, and most of us spend our lives kind of living as a swirling mass of self-concern.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we're constantly thinking about what we're going to eat, where we're going to go, what we're going to wear, who's going to be with us, what are they thinking about us, what are we thinking about them, what are we all going to do, where are we going to go? And if you really look at it, we tend to spend our time wrapped around our own self-concern. And in the course, people have an opportunity to, in a sense, stop the cycle a little bit and see the swirling mass of self-concern for what it is, and begin to connect with people on a more genuine, true base level.
So, how long is the course?
It's 3 days.
Now, how do you accomplish this in such a short amount of time?
Well, it progresses in depth and intensity. I would say the answer to that question is we create an enormous amount of safety.
Hmm.
We have a lot of agreements that we all agree to in the course. We have a lot of course leaders. We have a big production staff. And many people describe being in the course as like being in a sealed container, which is separate from everything else, where you are free to really look at yourself in a way that may have been scary to look at yourself before. Look in places and emotions and perhaps even your history in ways that you've never done before in the presence of others.
Mm-hmm.
And with that safety, in my experience of doing the course now for several years, is that when you create a lot of safety for human beings, what inevitably happens is things that they've been resisting feeling or looking at automatically starts to come up in a way and clear itself out.
It's sort of why people like some of the reality TV shows that bring people together and put them in close living situations. That even though there are cameras there watching them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the time, they do catch themselves having moments with each other where they start to drop their guard. They start to take their masks off. It's sort of a human dynamic that when you're in close proximity for a period of time, you just naturally start to open up. And that's sort of one of the things that helps move the course along at a very rapid rate, is that we're together for 3 days.
So who created this? And how did it get created?
That's a good question. Conventionally, you could say that Guy and myself founded or created the Arte and the Arte experience. And though you might find some kind of truth into that, there's another way to really say that. And that is that Guy and I didn't really invent it. We discovered it. And we feel that what we discovered is something very innate and natural to human beings. And when we found it, and discovered it, we started to practice it, and we practiced it with other people, great people such as Catherine Williams, Heather Rose, Peluso. Patrick O'Toole. There was all these great people that came around in the very, very beginning. Gustavo Duarte. These were the core people that came around the idea and the concept and what we were working with and started to create it with us. So essentially, the Arte Center and the Arte Experience is not something that me and Guy like to say we founded. We'd like to say we were the co-founders with others that invented and created and built it as a community. And so the real founder of Arte is the community of Arte.
Can you say more about that initial experience? What was that like for you and for them, if you can speak for them?
Well, we were, Jerry and I were on a camping trip together with a group of friends of ours. And we had met each other about 3 months prior to that, and we were just becoming friends. And Jerry had had experience in coursework and transformation in his past, and so did I. And we connected through some of those lines. And basically, we had an experience with a group of friends of ours where there was ways that people were communicating with one another in which they were being sideways, or another way of putting that, they weren't saying what was really there. Mm. And then one evening, Jerry and I just got together, and it came out of our relationship, it came really naturally. We just started having people say the truth. And what was fascinating about that is as they started to say the things that were difficult to say for them, they actually exposed themselves. And what happened is when they exposed themselves is everyone drew closer to them. And who they were a lot more revealed and seen. And what was interesting is one by one with all the people that we were sitting with, they started to reveal themselves. And there was a certain moment when they got really honest and they opened up that it was, you could feel it. Who they essentially were could be felt mm-hmm. by everyone else in such a way that was really, really, really inspiring. And afterwards, Jerry and I looked at each other and we were like, I have no idea exactly how or what that was. But it felt so open and it felt so inspiring. We just made a commitment that whatever that was, we were going to bring it into the world.
Wow.
And that was the beginning.
Wow. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, Guy's a little modest there because there was another piece that he likes to leave out because I think it's really personal to him. And that is that there was a moment right before we decided to do this together that he looked at me and he started to in a sense, talk about that true self in me that I didn't even know. He started to describe it. He started to describe it so thoroughly and completely that out of all the leaders I've worked with, some of the world's greatest leaders, that no one had ever seen me and articulated what they saw in such a fashion as he did. It blew my mind.
And you felt deeply seen.
I felt deeply seen, like the title of today's talk.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that happened right after he looked at me that way and saw me that way was the very perspective he had in looking at me and seeing me, I feel I acquired that perspective in that moment because I looked at him and I did, and I've never done it like that before, I did exactly what he did with me. I saw his true self and then articulated it back to him. And that really was sort of what was the jaw dropper for both of us, that something just happened that we couldn't even explain, but we knew that whatever that was worthy of us dedicating our lives to bringing that forward to the rest of the world for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that it's not an uncommon experience for people to find that initial moment of intimacy or the fear of that intimacy of sharing that to be really scary for people.
I would say that so scary that a lot of people design their life so they never have that moment, mm-hmm. never have to feel that fear.
So how long ago was that?
Six years ago.
So coming from that place of going, gee, I'm not sure what that was. 6 years of development, I'm sure that the experience is pretty well defined, pretty sharp experience, pretty safe and thoroughly designed experience.
I would agree. And
it's always an evolution.
It's always an evolution.
Yeah. Cool. What's the lasting impact in people's lives? Well, I mean, because I've seen a lot of people go to a course, and then, you know, for a couple of weeks, like, you know, they're very different. Mm-hmm. They experience some incredible state of experience. And then, you know, maybe a month later, it's kind of gone, and they're looking to go back to, you know, a course so they can have that experience. Mm-hmm. But they haven't actually integrated into their lives. So how do you, what's the lasting impact, and how do you guys assure that people will have lasting impact?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And you could say that I like to think of it moments of openness or moments where your heart open and you really discover something new. It's like a bell's rung. And what happens to the sound of a bell as time goes by is that sound starts to fade and go away. Mm-hmm. And I would say that most of the people who have gone through the Arte experience have had the experience of having their bell rung.
Mm-hmm.
However, the training of the Arte experience is not about getting your bell rung. It's about that you discover that which hits the bell, and you have access to that. So you can hit that bell in yourself. You can hit it in your relationship. You can hit that bell in your career. And the thing about that is that when you... I'll never forget the time when someone pointed at the FedEx sign, which I had seen my whole life. I've seen that FedEx sign my whole life. And they pointed to it, and they pointed to that there was an arrow hidden in that FedEx sign. I had never seen that before. But guess what? Every time I see the FedEx sign, what do I see? I see the arrow. Once it's pointed out to us, we can't not see it. Once who you are in your deepest self is distinguished for you and reflected back to you, once you have that, you'll never not be able to see that. And the other, I would say the other distinction is that, you know, you, one of the ways that we talk about it is that when you're being yourself fully, we call it being really open. And that when you're not being yourself, we call it being really closed. And people get a real in-time experience of what they're like when they're open and what they're like when they're closed, both from their view and from others' view. And when that's distinguished, when you walk out into your life, you're going to be able to realize that you'll have that distinction of like, oh, I'm closing right now. This is me closing. People are responding this way. This is what they were talking about. And when you're open, you can see that is in your life as well. And then you can start to have more choice.
I would guess that in that experience, they're also having certain feelings that go along with it. I would guess that that's the fear that they thought they were going to feel, maybe that goes away very quickly, and they're feeling maybe a feeling of warmth or comfort when they're connecting with others authentically or openly. And then maybe there's a feeling of that isolation when they're not doing that, I would guess.
And when they're open, maybe even a feeling of relief.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and then when they realize they're not going to die, right? Because really, it's almost like, oh, I don't want to open up because I'm going to get killed, right? It's like a fight or flight kind of fear, right? Oh, I might die. Then they have the experience, and they go, oh, wow, I'm still alive. And I feel better now. Oh, wow. So they
Exactly. In fact, in the course, you could say that the whole range of human dynamics and human emotions get experienced. The whole range of human emotion will be traversed throughout the course, and people oftentimes experience emotions they hadn't experienced for many years, and sometimes blocks and things that stop people emotionally clear up in the process of the course itself, so that therefore they feel freer in their relating afterwards.
Right.
Great. Well, you know, I'm curious. So we've talked about like true self, authentic self. It brings up the question of identity, like who we think we are or who we are. Do you guys work with the identity? And if so, can you say something about that or how people form their identities? Or
yeah. I want to back up a little bit to really get it, because this is really important. The human being, when we're infants and we're born, literally, we are the most helpless mammal on Earth. We can't do anything for ourselves. We are completely dependent on our parents and our environment for our physical survival and our emotional maturity. Hmm. And so we come out totally innocent and completely helpless. And so the first womb, I always think of it, the first womb that we go through is in our mother's womb. And then we're born, and then we're born into our second womb, which is the first, say, 7 or 10 years of our childhood. And our childhood serves for human beings serves as a kind of holding environment, where the job of that holding environment is to solely meet the needs of the child. And what ends up happening is, but, you know, if we really look at it, I look outside at the world, and the world's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is oftentimes there, we all have experiences where what we needed was acceptance and love and approval and belonging, and then not getting that, or almost getting the opposite of that. And at those moments early in our lives were moments where our holding environment broke down. And so at those moments, we then have to take over and hold ourselves before we're ready to. And you could say that those moments of holding or contracting in order to protect ourselves are where our identity gets formed. We make those decisions because when we experience sudden losses of love for the child, right, mm-hmm. this is enormously chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for the way our nervous system deals with chaos is it makes a concept out of it. It makes a map out of it in order to create some sense of order where we don't feel any. And because developmentally, when we're children, we're developmentally self-centered and we're supposed to be. So if I experience my dad as pulling his love away from me and yelling at me, at that moment, of course, I'm going to decide that he's doing that because something's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I make that concept and I blame myself for it, now my mind can do its job, which is create a strategy in order to belong again. And so if I decide that, for example, that my dad is withdrawing his love away from me because I'm stupid, I may very well create a strategy called I'm smart. I must be smart in order to get love. And so I will start to, you know, I may go into school, you know, dive into school super heavy and read everything I get my hands on, all in order to belong again and to feel safe. And what ends up happening is because that happens so early is that it's like the glasses that we put on, we mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
that we think that we are that strategy. But here's the thing about the strategy is that because it's based on a sense of something's wrong or something's missing from me, every time I exert that strategy, it thereby confirms that something's missing. So it actually has the opposite effect. And so in the Arte experience, how we work with the identity is that where those masks come up, they happen automatically. And they happen when I perceive that there's a threat in my environment, usually in my relationships with others. And what we discover is a lot of times, that threat isn't there. But yet we're still responding to it as if it's there. And we experience the same kind of emotions and all the strategies come up as if we were 2 or 3 years old when we were a child.
Right. Wow. And so during this course, by people, you're able to start to unravel that for people or expose another truth. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And people have often experienced going, in a sense, to that place that they made those decisions and making new ones.
Ah, yes. You know, I heard from one of my mentors at one point that every impactful event, you know, especially between the ages of like 2 to 12, that there's some decision made about yourself or about the world. And it's really powerful to go back and make a different decision or acquire new, rich, you know, empowering learnings that aren't about something missing or about a lack or about, you know, needing to. I mean, it sounds like, Guy, the way you described that, that could be running people's lives forever without ever. And so they're chasing this thing of wanting to belong and they don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. And they're also missing the ways in which they already are being loved and belong.
Mm. Right.
So it's almost as if their life isn't even their own. And they don't see what the beauty that's there right now.
Absolutely.
And to go back to one of your questions about sort of about how people are when they leave and go back out into, you know, going back out into your life after realizing that your life was created and designed out of these strategies to succeed and to survive, you realize that your whole life was set up to support that. The sort of the mistaken you, not the real you.
I can imagine this could be fairly jolting. I mean, do you guys, like, if you had people leave, quit their jobs, you know, like, I mean, there's this, I know one of the things I'm careful with in my work as an evolutionary guide is you don't want to give them too much without going, hey, let's make sure that this doesn't completely disrupt your life once you realize who you truly are or how much more you could be.
We have a major, major emphasis on the aftercare. Through doing this work for years, we really have really focused on the aftercare. And the aftercare is supporting people in restructuring their lives to the degree that's, you know, appropriate to meet who they really are when they come out of the course. So when people come out of the course, we don't encourage people to go quit their jobs and leave their relationships. And
well, I don't imagine you encourage it, but we encourage
people. Well, we encourage people to stay connected with the community of people they meet in the course, to foster a sense of community and gaining support. We offer coaching after the course. We offer different seminars and programs, men's circles, women's circles. There's a whole network of aftercare for people so that they can continue to grow and expand and appropriately alter their life, not just walk out with a big bang experience and then fall into their life and then try to change it all and then experience failure. That's not what we're committed to, and we don't encourage that.
Great.
We really encourage people to have what they want in their life.
So there's a lot of resources there.
A lot of resources.
I can imagine it would be really powerful for a couple to do this together.
Yeah, we do. Guy and I both coach individuals privately, and we do personal life coaching, and we also focus on couples and relationships, and we do that individually, and we also do that together. We work with people, and we also offer a couples course for graduates of the Arte Experience. So well, relationships is really a big focus.
Well, speaking of relationships, and we only have time for a few more questions. How does the Arte Experience improve or increase intimacy?
Well, the Arte Experience, it's about intimacy. And when people start to experience themselves genuinely and authentically, they start to want to bring that forward in their relationships. And they start to take off their masks in their relationships and start to reveal and show themselves who they really are. And the amazing thing that happens when someone starts to show them who they really are to another person, it tends to have the same effect on the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And then that connection, that intimacy, sort of going back, Julie, to what you were talking about in the work environment, with when there's somebody you want, they say a joke or something and you connect with it and you want to, it's something real and you connect with it and you want to connect deeper and it kind of makes it even more fun to work. The same phenomenon happens in intimate relationships when people come out of the course. They just naturally want to be more themselves and foster a community or a social network and personal network of friends and relationships that are being more themselves.
And I would guess now that they have the awareness of the benefit or enjoyment that they get out of having those types of interactions, they probably then seek out or engage in those interactions more now that they have that awareness of how beneficial that is for them. So sort of after that, I would guess that all of life becomes an opportunity to create little experiences. And the more of those we create, the more it reinforces and just continues on.
What do you mean by deeply seeing? Since it's the title of the show, I'm curious what you mean.
Well, I'll answer that from this angle. I have a 3-year-old at home. I'm the father of a 3-year-old. His name is Forrest. And what I'm witnessing in raising him is what is happening as he grows up, how important it is for him to be in the presence of me and my wife's gaze. That there is so much happening in him being seen and how we reflect him back to him. He is literally forming his identity through that experience. And so what that tells me is something that we've intuited for a long time, that there is something so important and essential to being deeply seen as a human being, that it's nourishment. Mm. And what ends up happening is that when we build up all this protection, what happens is we end up back behind all this protection and we never get really, really seen. We miss a deep nourishment. What happens is that when people start to let down their masks and they're witnessed for who they really are, after they jump over their fear and go through that, what ends up happening is their self-consciousness goes away. They're able to relax and be really, really witnessed. And it's the experience of being deeply nourished.
Hmm.
Being deeply nourished.
Wow. We can learn so much from little kids. We don't, you know, this is the thing that always gets me, is that we always think of kids as, oh, well, you know, they're not going to remember any of that anyway, and none of it really matters, when it's the most important time, and they have the most amazing things to teach us when they're that age.
Absolutely. I have two children. I have one that's 8 and one that's 6.5, Jeremy and Caleb, and what they see is amazing to witness for me, what they see in me and in my relationship with my wife, Deirdre. When Deirdre and I fight, unfortunately, there'll be these rare occasions, right? Rare, mm-hmm. where we may have a disagreement or fight near the children. Those kids are so sharp. They walk over there and they know exactly what's going on. And they've even got involved and said what they saw.
Wow.
One time I lied when she asked me a question. And I didn't think I was lying. I kind of had a sense I was full of it. And I looked over at my son, Caleb, and I said, why do you think mommy's mad at me right now? And he looked at me and said, because you lied.
Wow.
And that was when he was like 4. So those kids see everything.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say lied, I'm imagining you just mean you didn't tell the full truth about your internal experience?
True.
Okay, great. I just want to...
Rilke, the famous German poet Rilke, once said, may the world ripen in your gaze.
Mm.
May the world ripen in your gaze. And I've always really, really loved that, because it's been really accurate in our experience of leading the course, that even on a deeper level, that what it is to be a human being in a certain regard is the place where the universe, for the first time, has opened its eyes and checked itself out, took a look at itself. And then I think that our identities and our strategies, what ends up happening is it gets in the way of that. And as we let those things down, what we find is that the very essence of ourselves, and where we're all the same and connected, is that universally, what our being is for, or what it is simply the open spot where existence itself has said, wow, I am here. I am there. I exist. I am. And those kinds of experiences, I think, are when we're in our most authentic place, is what's most present for us is wonder and beauty.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the things that are worth modeling in a childlike world. Curiosity, wonder, beauty, joy.
So in our last couple minutes, how do people sign up? When are you teaching a course? How can people find out more?
When is the next course?
The next course is on the first weekend of November, November 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Okay.
And people can find out about Arte and the Arte Center for Excellence and our course and everything from our website, www.artecenter.com, www.artecenter.com. One word.
Great.
And I imagine since it's November, this thing probably fills up quick, huh? People, next couple of weeks is pretty much when people want to be signing up.
Oh, yeah. And if anyone wants to find out, when they go to the website, they'll see the contact information for our enrollment director, Annalisa, and they can contact her from the website and find out more. And I believe there'll be an introduction coming up soon, and they can get that information from her or from the website, and they can come and find out at the introduction.
No, so the intro is like a little taste of it? Or is that a?
Yeah, it's a little taste.
And that's a. Is there a fee for that? Is it a free intro?
It's a free intro.
Great. Yes. So, and how long is that? A couple hours or a day?
It usually lasts about 3 hours.
Okay, great.
It would be in the evening from about 7:30 to 10:30.
Right.
Fantastic.
So everybody I've ever met that's done arte has had amazing things to say about it. And when, you know, community is a concept that is kind of new to a lot of people. But I have to say that you were mentioning Annalisa. I'll give you an example of the arte community. I didn't know anything about arte, but I was going to Burning Man, and some of the people I was going with knew some of the people in arte and were part of that community, and we needed a car. And Annalisa gave a total random stranger, my husband and I, her car for a week to go to the desert. And we switched cars, and I just thought, wow, that's really amazing that she trusted me because we knew somebody in common, but we didn't know each other. And so I can only imagine the richness of the community and what this experience can bring to people.
Yeah, not only is she an extraordinary human being, we just simply love her too.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Again, I'm Jason McLean. I'm an evolutionary guide. You can reach me through emotionalawareness.com.
Great.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great to have you on. I'm Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant. I'm with Healthful Living, and we are at healthfullivingsf.com. And before I forget, the music that you were hearing when we first started the show, and the music I'm going to leave you with, is Micro Pixie, and she is doing she's having an event this evening from 8 to 12 at the Oxygen Bar, and tomorrow night at, I believe it's the Lucid Bar, from 7 to 9. So you can find out more information about her music and her events at aliceinstevywonderland.com. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned every Thursday at noon. Sure.